SMQBs, this is episode 153. We're a man down. We've had a reporter on the ground, and we have somebody who may break down. So there you go. That's your start. Let's get to it. Hey, Milk, who are you bringing to the bar to hang out this week?
The guy right behind me, number 13, one in your hearts, Mike Evans, re-signed today by the Bucks. Thought we were going to lose him, but we did the right thing and paid him what he absolutely deserved. And I'm excited to have him back to beat the Eagles next fall.
He wanted to play with the quarterback that'll get him to a Super Bowl. That was an interesting decision.
That's next.
Oh.
What, re-signing Baker?
Kirk Cousins coming to town?
Russell Wilson is available.
Yeah.
Toby's first pick next year in the IBFL draft will be Mike Evans. We all know it.
He's done well for me. I am going to go to the bar with none other than Jason Kelce. No better person to have a drink with. But after listening to most of that retirement speech today, I really want to find out where he got these qualities of just being a leader in life. He's an incredible human being, and man, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough without him.
Now, when this incredible leader of men is rubbing his nipples with his shirt off at the bar, is that, you think you'll?
That's the whole thing. He's a man of the people. You get what you get with Jason Kelce. There's nothing fake about him.
All right, Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar?
Are we allowed to bring dead people? I'm going to bring the ghost of Bob Gibson, because I've become intrigued by this Black Aces story that we talked about last episode. And I think Bob Gibson would have a little something to say about some of these modern pitchers being considered as top three pitchers of all time who couldn't even throw a complete game if their life depended on it.
All right.
All right.
I'm bringing Jos Verstappen to the bar, because I want to find out exactly what his goal is in trying to break up Red Bull and destroy what could be an epic dynasty in F1. If you haven't heard, he has come out and basically said, as long as Christian Horner is involved with the team, it's going to pull the team apart and divide it up, and it'll be devastating for the whole team. Unsolicited opinions from the father of the world champion, three-time world champion, Max Verstappen. So I'd love to know just what exactly he's up to, because it's certainly not helping anybody win world championships. That's for damn sure.
Interesting.
So, all right, let's get to it. Rooster, I said we had a reporter on the ground that was at the combine. Tell us what you saw. What was fun?
I'll tell you, it was really interesting. Despite one of our colleagues calling this a big ruse on one of our TikToks, I think the combine was interesting. I think there was a lot to learn from it. There are definitely some players who raised their draft stock and some who hurt their draft stock. But along the lines of the ruse comment last year was made in the context of Anthony Richardson, I think you're seeing the same overreaction to J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy basically went out there and did nothing but throw and prove to the fans that he can throw the ball. He can make standard throws, deep throws, outs, etc. Doesn't take away from the fact that for his entire career at Michigan, what he did was hand the ball off to the running back. So I wouldn't get too excited about J.J. McCarthy. I think he's probably good. I think that he was originally ranked by guys like Mel in the mid-20s. But now you got these people overreacting to the fact that he can actually throw a 50-yard, 60-yard pass and saying that the Patriots should take him third ahead of Daniels or what's his name from North Carolina, or that the Giants should trade up and take him at four or stay at six and take him. It's totally absurd.
Is this the Brock Purdy phenomenon?
It could be. It could be. But Brock Purdy threw the ball in a pro-style offense for 4 years, right before he came out. There was a huge body of work on the guy.
Yeah, I just meant kind of like that Opie-looking white dude quarterback who people think is going to manage the game.
Yeah, that could be. Speaking of Opie-looking white guys who stole the show, first day up was the defensive lineman, and this guy, Braden Fisk from FSU, 6'5", almost 300 pounds, ran a 4.78 40, and just crushed the position drills and everything else, hustled through every single drill. His stock has gone up for sure. Same with Tavondre Big Papa, the run stopper Sweat from Texas. 366 pounds of 5.27 40 time. I mean, you could see his man boobs like slapping him in the face when he's running, but that guy can move, man. Holy smokes. The edge rushers were very impressive. I talked about on our TikTok, Jared Verse from Florida State ran a 4.58 35 vertical. Dallas Turner looked good. Chop Robinson looked really good. And to me, the news was that Latu from UCLA looks really healthy. He's slower than the three guys I just mentioned, which is surprising because he's smaller. But he does look
doesn't he look sinewy?
Sinewy, my man. Sinewy. He's sleek, tall, lean, and looking good. No body fat. One guy who really hurt himself, though, one edge rusher, is this guy, Austin Booker from Kansas. He did what a lot of people do, including Xavier Worthy, and intentionally lose a bunch of weight to get a good 40 time. So he's now down a defensive line, down to 240. He ran a 4.79, which, you know, is 0.2 seconds slower than Jared Verse. And, you know, about the same time as big old Braden Fisk, who's damn near 300 pounds, 60 more pounds on him. The next day were running backs and cornerbacks. And I have to say that watching these guys, I now can get my head around the fact that guys like my man Saquon and Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry may just not get what they want in the market, because these young guys, especially at this position, are ready to step right in. Jalen Wright really stood out as pro ready. He's 5'10", 210 pounds, and he ran a 4.38 and just looked strong in everything he did. This guy, Isaac Durendo from Louisville, looks like a hell of a project. 4.33 40, jumped out of the stadium in all of his drills. He's going to be, you know, a returner, a good receiver, not nearly as ready as Jalen Wright, though, or Blake Corum, who also looked great. Trey Benson from Florida State looked great. I mean, watching these guys from Florida State, I'm sorry, Milk, just reinforces the fact that if their quarterback didn't get hurt, they were a legit playoff team. They have a ton of guys there.
Let me ask you a question. What's the scene like at the combine? I mean, are you just sitting in a seat watching, or how many people are like milling around? Are you seeing guys all over the, you know, players and coaches and everything? Set the scene a little bit.
I was surprised by how poorly the NFL handles the scene for fans. I mean, you know, the NFL is trying to monetize everything it can these days. And I mean, you see what's going on with the draft, right? I figured the combine would be about the same. You get in there, you get into the stadium, and you're sitting in the stadium. And if you want to hear what's going on, you actually have to use your earbuds and get on the NFL app and listen to the NFL Network show with Rich Eisen. And that is the only way you get the times in real time. It's absurd. So you're watching guys do the 40 in silence, and they're not posting the score inside the stadium. They are, if you go outside of the stadium where the vendors are selling, you know, beer and popcorn, the TVs are on and you can see the scores. It just makes no sense to me that there's no interactive experience for the fans on the inside the stadium. I mean, I hate to say it, but I could have gone back to my hotel room and followed it better than I did being there.
Multiple things happening at once, like the 40-yard dash is happening in this corner. There's stuff going on.
Just
on the other side,
generally not. I mean, the bench pressing is going on out of view of the 40. There are guys getting ready in groups to do other drills, but generally not doing them all at the same time. The reason to be there live is the interaction you can have at the hotels, in the hallways, and at the restaurants, because in Indianapolis is just a small city and you're going to run into people. I mean, I sat next to Dan Rooney Jr. on the flight out. It was very interesting to see the agents. I mean, you talk about kind of sleazy, what the agents are doing with some of these young kids, the so-called insiders. The whole thing is just, you know, it really interesting to see unfold.
Did you eat at St. Elmo's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where
I saw anyone around town.
I saw, we saw a bunch of people. I'm not going to name names because what I have to say is not kind. but, you know, like I said, some people really hurt this. I know. I'm turning over a new leaf. In terms of this combine really having an effect, I think Audric Estime, the Notre Dame running back, his draft position dropped like a rock. He ran a 4.71 40, slowest of all running backs or wideouts, and
he'll have the best career in the NFL.
Maybe he will, but people are going to be scared off by that bad time.
I mean, this is my thing. I stand by everything I said last year. I think it is super, super cool that you went to this, and I'm jealous. I would love to go see this live in person. I think it's an interesting petri dish, like I said last year, environment that you can see up close yourself or watch on NFL TV. And I think it translates next to zero to the NFL. I mean, you know, there are, because of what you're talking about, because of some people showing out, you are going to see people get overranked, overrated, and it's going to set teams back. I mean, we got one guy on this pod right here who's going to use a number two pick to get a quarterback that I'm guessing that the NFL history will show that he could have gotten someone equally as good, if not better, at a much later spot in the draft.
You know, that doesn't actually play out, but go ahead.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the last, I don't know, 15 or 20 quarterbacks that are Super Bowl champions. And you are not going to find a number one or number two seed barely amongst any of them. Okay, some of them got to the finals, but Tom Brady, Nick Foles, Patrick Mahomes. These guys are not top five draft picks.
Mahomes was 11. I mean,
he was okay.
So what you're saying, I think there's a lot of gray area here, because I agree with you that there are examples of what you're saying being absolutely true, but then there are other examples where performance and attitude and behavior at this thing, I think, is going to change some minds. And I'll give you an example. I think what you're saying is absolutely true with respect to Xavier Worthy, the guy who broke John Ross's record for the 40. There are going to be people salivating about how fast this guy could run. If Al Davis was still alive, he'd draft him with his first pick, no doubt.
It would be a huge mistake
because Xavier Worthy weighs 160 something pounds right now. Dropped weight for this thing, didn't participate in any of the route running or cast are pass catching drills. And I think there's a reason for that. He's not a very good receiver. He's not as good as his running mate on the on Texas, Adonai Mitchell, who will go ahead of him in the draft and weighs 40 pounds more than he does and only ran 0.13 seconds slower in the 40. Here's an example, though, of somebody who's just general presence at this thing, I think is going to help him. He didn't need much help, but he may. Don't be surprised if the Cardinals at four think about Rome Odunze ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr., or that if he's still there at six, the Giants don't take him ahead of Malik Nabers. Rome Odunze was the smoothest, most consistent receiver out there. He's a big guy. He killed all of his routes. All of catches were smooth. All his position drills. And then there was that one drill. I don't know if you saw it. Guys saw the one where they have that giant hula hoop, two giant hula hoops on the ground with towels that the guys have to run around and pick up the towel. He had a perfectly good time at this thing, but it wasn't as good as he wanted. After everybody was gone, he stayed and repeated that drill like five more times. And his attitude is just, I'm going to run through a brick wall until I get this right. Contrast that with Marvin Harrison, who only agreed to show up and do the medicals and the media interview and then blew off the media interview. I mean, what's the message there?
Okay. I actually want to respond to that because I thought you did a great TikTok about that. But so what? I mean, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, like, what you want from them is what you saw on the field for the last few years inside college stadiums of 80, 90,000 people. Like, yeah, would you like an A-plus citizen to speak with the media, to comport yourself as a gentleman? Sure. But so
how about
what?
If is you're really a team like the Giants who's been burned by Kadarius Toney recently?
Let me give
do you want to take a risk on another attitude like that? Malik Nabers does an interview during the combine where he says, oh, the Giants really like me. I think his exact quote was, when they get somebody caliber like me, he doesn't even understand what the word caliber means. I mean, it could be high caliber or low caliber. He just says caliber. They better go out and fix their quarterback situation. So he's shitting on Daniel Jones without ever having stepped on a fucking professional football.
Wait, who said that?
Malik Nabers.
Uh-huh.
So in my mind, as Joe Shane, I'm thinking, what the hell? Is this another Kadarius Toney situation? Why don't I just take Rome Odunze? The guy's awesome, and he's a model person.
House, the other thing, too, is, you know, football is such a disciplined team game. And when these guys start coming in and like, they're just bigger than the game, that's a red flag. I'm sorry. I mean, I think it's like the Caleb Williams stuff. Man, if somehow he fell to two and the Commanders took him, I will be telling you how amazing he is and what a great prospect he is for sure. But God, there's a lot of red flags around him right now. I mean, refusing to even do the medical stuff, like it's just, there's just so many red flags these guys throw up. Like, can't they just come in, they're kids and just put their head down and do the work? And I mean, the press cliches are very easy, which, by the way, brings full circle of Bulgara. But the cliches are, everybody knows them. Everyone knows what you're supposed to say. I don't know.
I mean, Peyton and Eli, John Elway, they pretty much mapped out their own route into the NFL. I don't know how many championships between them all. I mean, Eli was a brat.
Yeah, Eli was a brat.
I agree with that. I will agree with that.
Jump in here.
And he's got two trophies on your wall.
Yeah, yep. I agree with House. Doesn't it come down to just what did these guys do in college and what does the tape show? Like, I use Jameis Winston as an example because he just still fighting those demons. But here we are. We pick him number one. Unbelievable. Like the character stuff, I had some character issues, but like just like the testing was off the charts. His IQ, his football IQ, all that kind of stuff. You know what he did in college that was on the tape? Horrible problems turning the ball over. Horrible problems, interceptions at Florida State. What did he do in the NFL? Same thing. He couldn't fix it, never got over it. Like, what does the tape say? I don't know about Marvin Harrison. I don't know if that's a a trend if it was happening at Ohio State. I mean, I've never heard of that being a major issue, but like, that guy's unbelievable. And you would be foolish not to draft him. I don't care what happened in the
combine. I agree. I think that's a lot less worrisome than Malik Nabers' statements about the Giants quarterback situation.
So to the quarterback thing, because houses love to say the Commanders are going to fuck this pick up. I mean, first of all, it's like we know that like 40% of quarterbacks taken in the first round are actually decent quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot. But here are some of the recent winning quarterbacks. Mahomes, 10th overall. Stafford, 1st overall. Burrow, 1st overall. Roethlisberger, 11th overall. Eli, 1st overall. Flacco, 18th overall. I mean, your Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, take Brady out of it. And Brady's won 7 of the last 20, right? 7 of the last 21 now. I mean, they're all found in the first round. Sure. You've got these, you know, these throwaways, or maybe that's not the right word, but like, you know, the diamonds in the rough, like Russell Wilson, who was a third round pick, Foles, was a third round pick, although Foles was even a little bit of a different story because
sure,
he just pinch hit in the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, you could say, I know you want to say, don't take Drake May and take the kid from Tulane in the 4th or 5th round. They're just as good, but they're not. I mean, the statistics say that you have a far higher chance of winning a Super Bowl if you take the guy who's a second number 2 pick overall than a diamond in the rough in the 5th round.
I don't want to go overboard on just the Commanders, but I just think the day that I finally get to be a GM, believe me, NFL teams, you should hire me. I'm going to get you the Super Bowls you're looking for. You stick with best player available. If Marvin Harrison is what everyone thinks he would, particularly on a team like the Commanders who have a lot of needs, they wouldn't be hurting so bad if they got a wide receiver, if they got a left tackle for life, if they got, you know, I just think at 2, you better get it right. I think there's less a crapshoot about Marvin Harrison. I think there's less a crapshoot about some of these, this particular
O-lineman.
Apparently, O-lineman is supposed to be off the charts year.
Yep, they are.
But until you have the quarterback position, you're not winning the Super Bowl.
Well, House, I agree with you that you never scrap your book of knowledge that you've gained from watching a guy's tape through the years because of a 40 time or something like that. My only point is that there are some guys that you know are good and they do something at this thing that says, hey, and you say to yourself, hey, maybe we move up a little bit for him. And one example I'll give you is Ladd McConkey. Everybody knows he's good. He's a hell of a route runner. He's got great hands, smart. And most people had him going in the 2nd round. He posted a 4.39, and now all of a sudden the Chiefs are saying, we really need a good wide receiver. Why wouldn't we take him with our last pick in the 1st round? And that wouldn't be a bad idea. He looked damn good in everything he did. And everybody knows from the films that he is damn good. I think people were surprised how fast he is. Contrast that with Troy Franklin from Oregon, wide receiver. Everyone thought, oh, this guy's going to be a sleeper. He's going to be great. He freaking posted an okay time, but he's only 176 pounds, and he couldn't catch the ball during any of the drills. The gauntlet drill that they did, he looked lost and then dropped a ton of passes. So that guy's stock has to go down.
One thing. Are you going to penalize him?
Yeah, I would. He looked like shit.
But what if he? So you would penalize him, even though he did well in game time situation at Oregon. You're going to penalize him because he can't do some weird drill at the combine.
Well, compared to the other wide receivers, he just looked like he didn't belong.
Yeah,
that bad balance, right, bad footwork.
I don't know.
It's a controlled environment to put people next to each other. I mean, it gives you a baseline on a lot of guys. Anyway, all right. Anything else on the combine that we want to cover?
I would say the deepest class is the offensive line, man. Those guys look good. And this guy, Talese Fuago, holy smokes. He's a beast. And everything he does everything right from Oregon State. he helped himself the most, I think, of all the linemen at the draft. The other guys were like, you know, as expected. You knew Joe Alt was going to be good. You knew Troy Fontenot was going to be good, and Mims from Georgia, and Olu Fashanu, and J.C. Latham. But man, Talese Fuago stood out in all the drills, and he's the guy they call mean and violent. They talk.
I would ask you who gets the Mike Mamula Award, but it sounds like you think all these guys were impressed by all of it. But who's the guy who had the best combine who's going to suck ass when he gets the NFL?
J.J. McCarthy, in my opinion.
All right, there you go.
I think Penix is a better pick. Spencer Rattler also didn't look very good.
He sucks. He sucked at South Carolina.
Yeah.
I can't believe we mentioned Oregon and Oregon State in a pod together. It's amazing. It's never happened before.
All right. That's enough on Combine. House, we had all these magnificent athletes on display in Indianapolis, but who had the best, what athlete had the most impressive weekend in your view?
A future athlete that's going to be playing in Indiana. I mean, a current athlete that's going to be a future Indiana athlete. We, it's not a sport that grabs the attention on the daily news of sports in the sports world. So we don't talk about women's college basketball or women's pro basketball very much.
Careful.
I'm saying Caitlin Clark has changed the conversation. You know, I know when Diana Taurasi was playing and some of those legendary UConn teams, people were talking about what Caitlin Clark is doing is highlight reel, like every night, anytime. And what Nike has done very smartly to market her as one of their premier athletes is really doing great things, not just for women's college basketball, for women's professional basketball, but for women's sports. This kind of era with Caitlin Clark reminds me a little bit of what happened when the women's U.S. soccer team won the World Cup.
Yep.
And the Brandi Chastain, you know.
And they were far more interesting to watch than the men.
Yes. This feels like a moment. Like Travis Scott showed up to the game. You know, so you have got one of the world's biggest entertainers showing up, not to watch LeBron, not to watch Kevin Durant, to watch a women's college basketball player, Caitlin Clark, shoot lights out and become the all-time scorer of all college basketball, beating Pete Maravich. Now, you know, people are putting asterisks on this, that freshmen weren't permitted to play back when Pete Maravich played, and the number of points that he averaged per night, his record would have been unbeatable, but they are what they are. His numbers are what they are, and she beat the most prolific scorer in college basketball history. Caitlin Clark is expected to go number one to the Indiana women's NBA team. The women's NBA team has sold out half their season tickets for next year already. I mean, that's the Caitlin Clark effect. I think it's great. I really think it's great. She is a fierce, fierce competitor. There are not a lot of names on the Iowa women's basketball team that anyone else knows anything about, but yet she's propelling that team to whatever, number three in the country. They will be an odds-on favorite to be in the women's Final Four, which will again give enormous attention to women's college basketball if she's able to keep that team going all the way. And just, it's a great sports story. You know, I don't know if the record will one day be broken. I think it's going to be harder and harder to do in the men's game because people don't stay around for 4 years in college sports. But Caitlin Clark will easily go down as one of the best women's college athletes of all time. And we'll see what she has in store for her professional career. Really, really impressive. It was fun to watch.
There's a freshman at USC named Juju Watson who's got the same potential star power as Caitlin Clark. Keep an eye on her.
It's great. It's great for the sport.
I thought I saw some stat today that she has made, this is a Pope stat, I think this is right, she's made 88 shots beyond 25 feet. Like, and the previous record is like 51 in women's basketball. Like, oh. That's
Did you hear us when she set the women's record? She was like, "Well, you knew it was going to be a shot from the logo, didn't you?"
Yeah, right. You know, people don't really remember when Steph Curry was at Davidson. He was shooting. Yeah, he was shooting a lot like he ended up going on to shoot in the NBA, like just a dagger outside 3-point shooter. Same prolific shooter score the way Caitlin Clark is. It'll be interesting to see whether or not she can revolutionize the game in the same way in the professional sport. Will people start paying attention? Can Caitlin Clark keep this mojo professionally? Can she change the game? Can she fill up arenas? Will people, when Caitlin Clark's team is the opposing team, the visiting team, will people go to stadiums? We'll see.
Yeah. Watch this space, as someone you know likes to say. Milk, bubble watch. What happened? This was a big weekend for the bubble, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And you tell me about the. Let's start in the Big East because you guys are freaking out about how few teams are getting in. But right now, I've got UConn, Marquette, and Creighton. Is Villanova in? Is the question for me? I have them. This is going to go down to. Them going up against Seton Hall this week, I think, right? At Seton Hall.
Right.
Massive game. I think they have to win that to get in.
Like winner is
I agree with you. I agree with you. I they can't lose to both Seton Hall and Creighton, be 17-14 and get in. I even though they've got a great resume and they beat a lot of quad one teams, they have to win one of these two. Win one of these two and they're a lock. Of course they beat Creighton at home. That's an absolute lock. But that's a really tough hill to climb for them to beat Creighton. So they got to beat Seton Hall.
Who did Creighton play in their last game? Big win. They had a big win.
They had a big win.
UConn, and then they beat another really good team.
No, they lost. They had a loss. They invested somebody on here that we shouldn't take them because they're going to lose, but I got talked out of that.
No, let's start that.
Yeah. I just want to say that gambling is legal in most states. So.
Right. Gonzaga had a big weekend. They were on the bubble. I think they punched their ticket. They had a huge win against St. Mary's. I think they're in. I'm telling you, this is going to go down to the SEC and Big 12. I've got like 9 teams going in per conference right now, with maybe more to come depending on this week. Like Mississippi State on the bubble, probably going to get in here. A&M could get in. You already have I've already got Tennessee, Bama, Auburn, South Carolina, Florida.
This makes me sick, all this.
Kentucky. Yeah. But I mean, look, the Big 12 is much stronger. They've got, I don't know. I've got Houston. I mean, obviously Iowa State, BYU, Kansas, Texas Tech, TCU. Yeah, I don't know. And then the ACC, I've got 3 big bubble teams. I think Syracuse has to beat Clemson this week to get in. Yes. Wake Forest had a huge win against Duke. Then they lost 2 in a row. They need to win out.
Yes.
I think Pitt probably has to win out to get in. But, I mean, ACC, traditionally pretty strong conference. I only have, I mean, UNC, Duke's in, obviously. I would throw Clemson in. Right now, as a lock, but only 3 teams, and the Big Ten's pretty down too. Are you scared of anyone in the Big Ten? Purdue, Illinois.
Scared of anybody? I mean, who's scared of anybody at this point?
Well,
why not? Right,
fellas, it's Houston and UConn.
On Saturday, Creighton beat Marquette 89-75. I will repeat that I'd be scared of Creighton and. Into early rounds. They're going to knock off some teams that are seated higher than they are.
They lost one game on the road to a St. John's team that's back up against the wall. But besides that loss on the road at St. John's, they beat Connecticut by almost 20. They beat Seton Hall by over 20. They beat Marquette by almost 15. Like these are top Big East teams that they're crushing.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a good squad. All right, well, still we'll keep an eye on the bubble. I mean, somebody's bubble is going to burst at some point here, but not yet, right? I mean, we haven't seen it yet. It seems like it's still wide open.
One of the interesting things about the Big East and the Big 12, I saw something the other day that a lot of the Big 12's games outside the conference have been really patsy games. Like some of these teams really padded their schedules to ensure that they got in the tournament. It will not surprise me this year if these, I don't know how many Milk just routed off, 7, 8 Big 12 teams. It will not surprise me if some of those are knocked out early in the tournament. Keep your eye on that and on whether or not the Big 12 is really for real, even though they're going to put 7, 8 teams in the tournament. Let's see if any of them really make it very far.
All right.
Yeah. Kansas is the biggest fraud of all of them.
They always are.
I didn't used to think so, but lately they've been playing like such crap. And
Yes, they did win the national championship, but usually they lose in the tournament. I'm right about this. But I could see, I could see Baylor going on a huge run. The Big 12 has been beating themselves up too. I mean, they're playing stiff competition. I know there's some issues with their out of conference, but every weekend they're playing somebody who's in the tournament, basically.
Baylor's from top to bottom. Lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Baylor's been playing really well lately.
Yeah.
Well, that's what makes this fun.
It's going to be a good one.
All right. Anything else on the bubble? All right. Well, we got our own March Madness this year, right? Last year we did Girl Scout cookies. This year we're doing a combo. We're getting through March Madness with our bracket as we lead up to opening day of the greatest baseball movies of all time.
I'm gonna
disclose the seedings now. I'm sure there will be some argument over the seedings. We'll have to see how the committee did getting this right. And then we're gonna have one round each week between now and opening day, and we'll get down to the number one. Drum roll, please. Someone.
I think there could be a real brawl over the number one movie at the end.
I don't think it's as uniform as you think.
Already
decided. No.
Can you guys see that?
Yes, our fans can see it. All right.
Holy shit! This is like official.
So with the one seed, we have Field of Dreams going up against Million Dollar Arm, the 16th seed, just barely into the bracket here.
unlikely to be a UMBC there.
Down at the bottom of the bracket, the number two seed Bull Durham against the 15 for the love of the game.
I love that movie. I'm glad it made it in.
It's in. Let's see. We got to go to the three seed, which is The Natural.
I'd like to talk to the seeding committee about that.
I put The Natural.
How is that a three seed?
Wow.
One or two for me.
Well, another. Okay.
I guess, rookie.
I guess Mark Emmert set this up too. Go ahead.
The four seed Moneyball taking on the 13th seed 61 asterisk.
That's a high
five seed,
seed.
A League of Their Own up against.
Good.
At 12, the Bad News Bears, the Ever Danger 5-12.
That's a 12-5 upset waiting to happen. I'm just saying.
Never know. The 6 seed, Major League, taking on the 11 seed, Trouble with the Curve.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember
at
that.
At 7, movie. We have 8 Men Out, taking on the 10 seed, the Pride of the Yankees.
Should be at least a 4 seed there.
And the 8-9. The 8 seed, The Sandlot.
Oh my God, is that? They should be way higher than that.
Taking on the number 9, 42. All right, let the debate begin. Where's the problem?
Hold on. I just want to say that every year there's controversy as to who has been left out of the tournament. And we already have a call that's come in from the producers of Angels in the Outfield. They're very upset that they're not in the bracket. So this is not going to be without controversy. Angels in the Outfield is very upset.
Well,
my kids are going to be pissed that the rookie is not in here or rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year is a great one.
Oh, which one is that? Rookie of the
year. It's not on the list.
Hmm.
Yes.
Wait, so are we picking, Rooster. Are we picking this week or no?
No. You guys got a week to watch all these matches.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
So you can go back and remind yourselves of the games. So wait, so what's wrong with the, you guys think the one seed, you don't like the one seed Field of Dreams?
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to fight with the one seed.
I'd put the natural ahead of that.
Really?
Close enough.
Yeah. Field of Dreams is a little too syrupy for me.
That's Milk's winner. I know it.
Bull Durham?
I'm going to struggle with that.
Bull Durham could be a one also.
Yeah.
It could also be a five.
Rooster, what was it like to watch The Pride of the Yankees in the movie theater?
In 1942?
All right. So that's that. That's the bracket. We will share this on Facebook and wherever else.
Love
Twitter,
it.
X, this whatever that's good. Called. And once we get that out there, let the debate begin.
Moneyball is highly underrated, by the way.
What is
Moneyball?
Moneyball, yeah, it's a four seed.
Where do you have Major League?
Six.
That's a good spot.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's top six.
I think the seating committee
did well there. I think did well, Mace. I'm impressed.
I'll tell you one that's left out. Bang the Drum Slowly.
Yeah, I had that. I had that possibility. That was one of the first four out.
Bang the Drum Slowly. What is that? I don't know that one.
It's about some, it's sort of like the Gale Sayers story, but not true.
Yeah.
Not true. Okay. Should the Sandlot have been in there?
Absolutely. Unquestionably.
It is.
Yeah, it's an eight seed.
Oh, the Sandlot's in there. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a pretty high seed for the Sandlot, I think. Looking back on it, I think that the Bad News Bears have maybe an argument that they should have been a higher seed.
Agreed.
But you know what? They're always underestimated. So it wouldn't fit if they were like the one seed. That would be weird. So, all right, we'll get back to you next week. We'll vote on the pod and we'll vote through to the next round and check out Facebook to give us your views on this. All right. We got to pour one out, unfortunately. Milk, we got a sad one to pour out here today.
Mort, the original insider, we talked about that earlier. The new generation, of course, knows Adam Schefter and who's the other one?
Ian Rappaport.
But the original newsbreaker, NFL insider, was Mort, and he passed away this week, and he's had a long time battle with it's cancer, right?
Throat cancer. Know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it throat cancer? Yeah. And I guess he stopped. When did he stop? Like at the end of last year, kind of walked away.
Really slowed down a lot after 2016 with the diagnosis.
Right. Yeah. And you could kind of tell when you saw him on TV, but from all everything I hear and read and just, hearing, watching him over the last 20, 15 years, whatever, I mean, seemed like a really genuinely nice guy. And really paved the way for all these other guys to come in and get real-time information, what was happening in the league, who was doing deals, where trades were going. What's the notorious? I think I saw he broke the whole Peyton Manning to the Broncos, which was massive back then. He'll be missed. So yeah, we definitely need to pour one out.
Unlike the guys today who just call themselves insiders, Mort started out as a real reporter. I think that's the difference. He wrote for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, then went on to what was that major baseball newspaper, Chris?
It was actually for all sports, the National.
Yeah,
National. He wrote, which was the greatest newspaper of all.
Yeah, it was awesome.
The sport.
He was the real deal. He was the real deal. Also funny and just had the integrity that I don't think you see with people running around calling themselves insiders today.
Yes. Schefter seems dirty. I don't know.
Oh, man.
He just seems, I don't know. He's...
I don't think Ian Rappaport is too far behind him. I have another pour out to Red Sox Nation. 5 months after their beloved knuckleballer Tim Wakefield died of brain cancer, his 53-year-old wife died of pancreatic cancer, leaving behind some relatively young children. And of course, this story came out a little while ago because our least favorite former Red Sox, Curt Schilling, decided without permission from the family to disclose both of their diagnoses on a podcast. Just a piece of crap, that guy. But anyway, what a sad story. I feel terribly for the Wakefield kids and all of Red Sox Nation.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
All right. Who's got a punchable face? Don't call it a comeback.
I've got one. I'm going to punch Saudi Arabia and the World Chess Federation. There's a young woman who's a chess grandmaster named Anna Mazichunk, who could go in the upcoming weeks to Saudi Arabia and play in a speed world fast class and blitz championship, you know, where they do speed chess. You've seen that, where they're constantly clicking the timer with the pieces. She says she could go and play in that tournament and win more money than she could playing in dozens of other tournaments. But she refuses to go because Saudi Arabia would make her wear traditional garb, an abaya, and be accompanied by a man when she left her hotel. And she's not allowing them to dictate their religious beliefs on her. And I say good for her, but bad for the World Chess Federation. If you're going to be one of these sports that allows Saudi Arabia to sports wash, you can't subject the women in your sport to their behavior. It's just wrong. And you know, like you see, Formula One is too big for Saudi Arabia to get away with that. And some of these other countries, they don't have to comply with this stuff. But the lowly chess federation does, and it's just wrong. I mean, stop playing in these countries if they're going to treat your athletes like that or your participants. I just think it's wrong. Only in America can we impose our religious beliefs on other people.
There will not be a Queen's Gambit too.
All right, I got a punch. Just a quick punch here. This is kind of like a jab. Jacksonville Jaguars.
What do they do?
All this. Oh, God.
They wished his name is Florenzo Fatukasi a very happy birthday today on their social media. Happy birthday, Big 94. Have a great day. You're released right after they posted on social media. Wishing him a happy birthday. They killed the motherfucker. See ya.
Oh, God.
All right. That's just a quick chat to the chat.
Everyone likes a happy birthday from everyone.
For being fucking stupid. Nice job, guys. All right. Well, this is the moment we haven't been waiting for. Who's got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
I'm going to try to do this. Stay composed.
So help me God if you cry. So help me God.
Don't you dare.
Speaking of a league of their own.
Because I'm surrounded by you jokers, I won't be able to feel the emotion that is due to Jason Kelce for this lasso. I am certain if you go around to NFL games all around the country, you will not find stadiums filled with the number of an offensive lineman. I'm trying to even think of one in the NFL right now that's such a dynamic, like, beloved player of a team and the fans?
Mike Webster.
Okay, but that was a long time ago. Or the Hogs got there has not been an offensive lineman who had this kind of character and this kind of success and this kind of impact on a team and the players like Jason Kelce for a long time. He will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But here's what I love. Here's what I love about Jason Kelce. I'm going to read you from this NFL.com just to bring it full circle, his combine review. Kelce has the mobility and mentality to make it as a reserve center in the NFL. However, does not have the size or power to project as a starter. In pass protection, does a good job getting set, can slide and feet and move laterally, but struggles with the pull rush and pass rushers with a wide array of moves. Has the feet and quickness to project well in a zone blocking scheme, but still needs to become more consistent locating his man on the second level. Is never going to be a road grading run blocker who blows defenders off the ball. Late rounder or rookie free agent. Which is why I said what I said about the combine. You cannot measure heart at the combine. And this guy's heart, every single Eagles offensive record from 2011 when he was drafted until now was with Jason Kelce under center. He changed the team. There will be a massive void at leadership. It turns out that I think Fletcher Cox is retiring too, who I think also will make it into the Hall of Fame. But when we lost Malcolm Jenkins to retirement and he moved on to another team, I mean, from the Super Bowl, basically what you had was Brandon Graham, Lane Johnson, Fletcher Cox, Malcolm Jenkins, Jason Kelce. Almost all of those guys are going to be gone. And kind of just coming full circle again to something Bison said earlier on this, you know, football, it's a team game and all these stats are important and everything, but everything has to work together. Jason Kelce was the glue, was the engine. He is what made the Eagles so successful, not just on offense, but just as a team mentality, a character. He spent a lot of time, mainly because he was very, very emotional today, getting through it. But if you want to just hear a great, great speech, forgetting about retirement, anything, just the way you conduct yourself as a person, as an athlete, as a player who understands what the city is about, what his teammates about. The guy, for God's sakes, gave remarks to his first band instructor. He thanked everybody that got him. He never forgot who he was. And I love retirements where people are still at the top of the game. He was an all-pro center last year and he's retiring. And I think being able to retire on your own terms and just saying, and one of the main reasons he's retiring is because he said the greatest gift that you can give is to be a great parent to your kid. And my kids are just like all under, you know, 5, 6 years old. And I can be the next great thing I can do in life is just be around and be a great father. I mean, who says that? Who says that kind of stuff? So it's a lasso really, because it's a sixth round pick who should have been a undrafted free agent, who should have never been in anything in the NFL, who will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And he's much more than a player that just Eagles fans like now. He's beloved in the NFL. He's a really cool guy. We all saw what he did up in Buffalo and become with a team that was losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, he became legend to the Buffalo Bills fans. It's a big loss for the NFL.
Do you think that did he thank Taylor for helping increase his visibility and popularity across the NFL?
I think he helped Taylor Swift today sell more albums by lacing some of her lyrics and song names into his speech. So Taylor can thank Jason Kelce for that later.
He do that?
Yeah, that's he used some song titles in his speech. I heard
that's
he just
what the
didn't
50s
have,
are saying.
I heard he just didn't have the stomach for another quarterback transition.
You never know. You never know.
It's a good question. What is this? How does this affect Jalen?
A lot. A lot.
House is the window closed.
The window's closed. I don't think he's going to do a Brady stupid thing like
no,
he did.
I mean, on the Eagles, on this mix of the Eagles getting back to the Super Bowl.
I think so. I think it's going to be really tough. You know, last year, Rooster like creamed his pants over John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, the center that came in for the Giants. And I mean, some of these guys
get hurt.
Yes. We brought in a guy like that. That's the heir apparent to Kelsey, this guy, Cam Jurgens, you know, like had a same kind of pedigree, the way Jingle, whatever his name is, you know, John, whatever his name is. I just don't see Jurgens being the same level of player. I think a center is really, really important. You know, you guys just went on and on about how important the quarterback is. You don't have to have an all pro, but you better have someone not just protect you on the left side, but you better be really in sync with your quarterback at center. I know
it's a brutal position too.
You've had a good one in Tampa, Milk.
Well, and right? when Ryan Jensen got hurt in Brady's last year, it's a massive difference.
Yes,
you're right. It's a big deal.
You didn't think we were going to let you get through that with being all sappy and everything without a few good digs, though, right?
I wish I could have gotten my real emotions out, but thank you guys for protecting me from myself.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
We're there for
He's
you.
He's got a buzzer beater.
I've got one. So I want to get back to the to this Black Aces story. There's only 15 guys in this club of Black pitchers who've won 20 games in a season. I think that's remarkable that they're that few. We talked about Dave Stewart and Dontrell Willis last episode.
Can I ask if one is on there? I'm curious.
Well, I'm going to ask you guys a trivia question. So okay. we're now down to 13, and then I'll tell you two of them are in the Hall of Fame. Bob Gibson and Ferguson Jenkins. So now we're down to 11. Can you name any of you guys name two of the remaining 11 pitchers?
I don't know that he got this far with 20 wins, but did Oil Cam Boyd get there?
No, I think 17 might have been his highest.
What's the criteria, Rooster?
20 wins in a season as a starting pitcher.
Dave Stewart.
Well, we already talked about him last episode, so he's out. Yeah, yes, he is a two-time 20-game winner.
Yeah,
but he's out.
So it's really hard.
Only in the majors.
Yep.
They're currently in the majors?
No. They were in the majors.
How about CeCe?
Correct.
Oh, you count CeCe? Okay, because like, for example, you would not count Pedro Martinez in this list, right?
Correct.
This is hard. It's very, very.
When did this guy play? What decade?
Dwight Gooden.
Correct. So you got
Dwight
two.
Gooden, duh. Oh, Dwight Gooden, so easy. That's so.
I'll
easy.
Give you guys a hint. One of Dave Stewart's teammates is on this list.
On the A's.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. Yeah.
Vita Blue.
Can we cover?
Here's one that's going to really drive you nuts, Milk. David Price.
Oh, that's an easy one, Milk.
That is an easy
How
one.
How did I miss Price?
And then we did a feature story on one of these guys who went from being low ERA.
Astros.
Yep. J.R. Richards.
J.R. Richards. Oh, yeah, of course. J.R. Richards.
So some of the others are Don Newcomb for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Al Downing. Mudcat Grant, who's the guy who coined the phrase Black Aces and wrote a book about it. Sam Jones, who I'm not familiar with. Mike Norris and Earl Wilson. And then, of course, Bob Gibson, Ferguson Jenkins, Dontrell Willis, and Dave Stewart. It's a pretty small group. Surprisingly small.
Surprising.
Yeah. Sure is.
I have a buzzer beater on the NFL. There's a few quick topics. Speaking of records being broken like Caitlin Clark, if the NFL keeps going, expanding the game so they can make more money, now they're saying it's very likely they're going to go not just to 17 games, which they went to. Now they're going to go to 18 games. All the records are going to be broken and all the legs are going to be broken. That is some toll.
And they're going to more countries.
Yeah, they're going to Mexico, Brazil,
Mexico.
Germany, England. The thing is, like, for college players in particular, that rookie season is going to be a big jump. Most of these college players are going to get 11, maybe a 12th game in if they're in a bowl. And if they play in that bowl, that's a big jump. That's a full extra half a season for them to play. So there's that. The tush push is likely to stay. The, you know, when you fumble the ball out of the end zone and it's a touchback, which has had some controversy, that's likely to stay. So the competition committee is likely to keep those two. And I'm in favor of keeping both of those, the tush push and the fumble out of the end zone for touchback. And I think we just have to say, because we started at the top with this, we got to comment for a second about Russell Wilson. I mean, one of the most catastrophic contracts in history for a team. It has decimated the Broncos. It'll be interesting to see just how far that has set them back. Now, they did get this benefit of this extension, you know, with all this money that came in from the extra cap, but the cap hits on that team over the next 2 years on Russell Wilson are crazy. Like 30, what, 40, $50 million.
Is it right that his contract, so even if he goes and plays somewhere else, they don't get a credit for the salary?
Nope. Not on the cap hit issue.
No, but not just in general. I think they just have to pay him, period. I don't think they get a deduction. I think that's in his contract.
Yeah, that much.
So they're not saving a bunch of money by waiving him. Is that what you're saying?
They're saving money on the cap hit.
I think just for maybe this year.
Because
I mean, he's got the largest cap hit now in NFL history of $85 million.
Jeez.
In the next 2 years.
Right?
I predict that if they draft J.J. McCarthy for at least 2 years, that guy's not going to be as good as Russell Wilson is right now, which isn't great.
I'm going to be very interested to see where he ends up. I mean, there are plenty of teams that need a quarterback. How about the Buccaneers?
Would they take Russell Wilson? I'd take Baker over him right now.
Do not send Russell Wilson here. No.
Baker's had two strong years in a row.
I'll take Bakes.
Wow.
How about the Falcons?
The Falcons need to sign Kirk Cousins.
They were going to sign Justin Fields.
Justin Fields, lock it up. Yeah. Justin Fields is going to the Falcons.
All right. Well, who's gonna play for the Raiders then?
Russell Wilson. Does Kirk Cousins end up back in Minnesota?
Kirk Cousins. There you go.
Does he end up back in Minnesota?
He should.
Anyway.
All right. Hey, House, if they add another game, are they gonna increase the roster?
Actually, I haven't heard that part. That would be interesting. They probably should open up a couple roster spots to that many games.
Yeah, I mean, guys are going to, it's going to be a lot of injuries. And I mean, they got to, I don't know, it just seems like you got to do something, right?
Does that mean we play in Brazil? Does that mean the season starts earlier or ends later? And what happens to these preseason games?
I don't know, but if they push it out a week, then we could have President's Day. We have the Super Bowl on President's Day. We get our holiday. All right. Anybody else have a buzzer beater? Anything else? Milk, you got one?
We'll be back when Pope gets back next week. I'm sure we're going to cover bourbon again. Sorry to our listeners if you missed
a bourbon. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We didn't do that.
I forgot. We'll get you that.
We'll get you a bourbon next week.
Yeah. All right.
I'll do next week. I've got a good one.
All right. All right, guys. Good show. Have a good week, everyone.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.